Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. And that goes especially if you are listening outside the United States, where we have all of our stations. So wherever you are, the Philippines, Mexico, South America, Africa, wherever, it's good to have you on board. Please tell your friends and family about Relevant Radio and the app so we can grow our listeners in far-flung places. As I mentioned, we need to spend some more time on email, so I've got a big stack of them here. I try to get to as many as I can throughout the shows, but I want to make a concerted effort on this one, this hour, that is. So this one comes in from Chicago. This is from Anna, and she says, my sister and I have been estranged for a long time now, reason being that based on her indifference toward me and wanting to exclude me, I know too much about her, and I think she's afraid that I will call her out on things, though I haven't. I finally got tired of tolerating her behavior. Needless to say, she has enablers in the family who give in to her behavior. That doesn't include me. At family functions. She says, I've started to defend myself and walk and speak in the truth and call them out on some things. I wonder when the term called out became so popular. People never used to say that. Now it's what they say. I guess it means to challenge somebody, to confront them when necessary. So she says, I think they are starting to say that I should just reach out. Yet I asked them if they have had the same conversation with her, considering that I didn't cause the behavior. They say, well, you're more mature in your walk with Christ, etc. The irony is that she, my sister, is a pastor at a Christian church. She says, I'm protecting my heart and don't trust her because it's been years of it. I pray for her and ask for blessings for her. I keep hearing Exodus 14:14. What are your thoughts? Okay, well, I'm sorry that you're experiencing all the heartache that you've been going through. That's got to be miserable. And I understand that, you know, in families, there are just sometimes irreparable situations where you can't change it. Sounds like you've tried in different ways. So Exodus 14:14, for those who are not familiar, says, the Lord will fight for you. You have only to be still. What are my thoughts? Well, first thing is, she's your sister. Obviously, you love her. You don't like her. And you're not obligated to spend time with her. You're not obligated to win this battle. So when you say the Lord will fight for you for what? I mean, fight against your sister, fight against your family? I personally wouldn't read into that verse maybe something that might be occurring to you, that God is going to fight against your family for you. I don't think that's the way I would try to look at it. Rather, what I would say is, given the difficulties, given the heartache, and given all of the rough edges and all that, just be pleasant and serene and go about your life. And if there are family functions that you know that she's going to be at, you don't have to go. You could say, well, it's not fair. How come I don't go? She goes. Well, you could go and you can make the best of it and not allow yourself to get dragged into these controversies. And if other family members give you a hard time, you could set them straight, but with a smile on your face. In other words, I guess what I'm saying is, in reacting to this, I can be clinical and detached because it's not my family. I can't be clinical and detached when it comes to things in my own family because, like you, I have emotions and history and experiences and disappointments. And so, I mean, each of us brings those realities into situations like this. And I recognize that and I respect that. But this is why I can be clinical and detached, because I don't feel any of those feelings because it's not my family. So in hopefully a clinical and detached way, my advice would be live your life. Life's too short. Don't allow yourself to be a hostage to this problem. If it's tolerable and you can be at these family events and participate and have fun and all of that, then I would say do that and just be polite to her, but ignore her. And if that's not tolerable, and if really the only time you would ever see her is at family events, then maybe just start cutting back on going to family events. And in the end, I mean, what have you lost? Not much. What have you gained? Well, some peace of mind, some sanity, you know, less wear and tear. The older I get, one thing's for sure, Anna, the more I have learned that lesson. You know, I used to hear people say all the time, life's too short, life's too short. And I really understand it now in a way that I didn't used to, because if you're, and not per se you, but just rhetorically you, if you live your life walking on eggshells, worrying about what other people think of you, it's going to be a pretty miserable life over time, because sooner or later there will be people, including in your own family, who just will not be agreeable with you, and that's just how life is. So I offer you that advice since you asked for it. That's my reaction to this. I wouldn't think in terms of God fighting for you. I don't think Exodus 14:14, it's not a verse that I personally would lean upon. I don't know that this is a battle that needs to be fought to a standstill or to some victory. You know, be polite, be charitable, and live your life. That's my advice. And I appreciate you having confidence in me, and thank you for writing to me. 888-914-9149. Here's a note that comes in from Joseph. And Joseph is listening in Walnut Creek, California, on our 104.9 FM station. He says, Patrick, I want to thank you for your insights into the subject of pornography and the spiritual ramifications that go with it. And he references a particular sin that he says, I'll read the rest of his letter. You'll get the idea. He says, after 45 years of this addiction, and he's referring to the addiction to viewing pornography and another sin that almost always seems to be associated with the viewing of pornography. He says, after 45 years of this addiction, I have learned not only that porn harms the relationships that one may form with the opposite sex, but in my case, it leaves me, and this is all in caps, not caring if I get into a relationship in the first place. The fantasy relationships take center stage, and this explains, he says, my loneliness for the majority of my life. If I am of the group who tend to watch the same things, I'm cleaning things up here and there as I go along. If I tend to watch the same things each time, I can name a dozen of them easily. After returning to the Catholic Church a few years ago, I have been to confession again and again as I work to wean myself off porn. That can be triggered by an image in my mind or sound. Is probably the most difficult thing I can do. One little voice screams, stop, don't start, and you won't finish. The other voice says, well, you looked at that. You're going back to confession anyway, so you might as well keep going. He says, happy to say the first voice wins more than in the past. So he says, thanks for your show. I listen often. Please pray for me. The rosary does help. The best time to say it, I find, is when my mind wanders in that direction. So, all right. Well, thank you for your honesty, Joseph. I do appreciate it. And I can only imagine that there are people listening right now for whom what you just described is very familiar to them. In fact, it's a very familiar sin and syndrome for countless people nowadays. So what are you going to do? Well, I would recommend, and you've already alluded to it, and that is pray the rosary. If you make a commitment to praying the rosary every day, it will have the effect, as you're probably experiencing right now, it will have the effect of making it that much more difficult for you to fall into the sin, because if you're committed to praying the rosary every day, and you know, well, I haven't prayed the rosary yet, do you really think you're going to feel great? Do you really think you're going to feel prayerful and and close to the Lord and close to Our Lady, praying the rosary later that day if you've been wallowing in these sins? Of course not. So not only is the rosary a powerful weapon against vice, it's a way to help cultivate virtue in your life. And that, by the way, is the way to overcome vice. St. Thomas Aquinas gives us a beautiful treatise on the virtues in the Summa. And I could boil it all down. He has a lot to say, and it's all very good. I encourage you to read it. But if I could boil it all down to the essence, he says that if you, as you detect these weeds of sin in your life, I'm using the term weed here. He doesn't use that. But as you detect these weeds in your life, these vices, the way to conquer them or to spray Roundup on them, spiritually speaking, is you start proactively cultivating the opposite virtue, the virtue that opposes that vice. So in your case, the vice is lust, or at least one of them is lust. So the thing to do, St. Thomas says, is to start working assiduously, little by little, and sounds like you are, which is great. Start cultivating the virtues of purity and chastity. Chastity having to do with the sins that you don't commit, you refrain from committing with your body, and purity, the sins that you commit with your mind. Now, in the case of what you're describing, you're using both body and mind to accomplish these sinful actions. So start cultivating that virtue. Now, you mentioned it's interesting because this is a common thing, not only with this particular addiction, but addictions in general can be alcohol and other things. When you realize that a certain thing can trigger this in you, it can start the engines, it can flip the switch, and everything is turning on now, and you don't want that. Well, a few things that you can do. Number one is avoid those situations. If you know that certain areas or people or places are likely to help trigger these yearnings on your part, just avoid them. And remember what Jesus said about it's better to go to heaven without a foot and a hand and an eye than to be thrown into hell with your foot and your hand and your eye. And he says, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. And he doesn't mean that literally, obviously. But he's saying be ruthless and radical in eliminating the things in your life that lead you into these serious sins. So maybe that means you need to get a dumb phone instead of a smartphone. You may say, well, I need my smartphone because I've got to do email. Well, how much do you need the smartphone, and is it going to do you much good if you're in hell? Obviously not. Maybe the thing to do is to get some filtering software on your phone. You mentioned you don't have a female relationship of the healthy sort anyway. Get a buddy. Get somebody in your parish, maybe your parish priest or somebody else you know and can trust, somebody in your family maybe, and set up some accountability software on your computer and on your phone. That way, it's even more of a hedge. It's even more of a disincentive to fall into that sin because you know that somebody is going to get a real-time announcement that you're doing some stuff that you shouldn't be doing. That can be very helpful. So be creative, but I would say be ruthless and persistent. Another thing I would recommend would be that as you are cultivating the virtues of purity and chastity, one thing you can do, and anyone can do this, and it's very helpful to do, and that is what's known as custody of the eyes. That's a term that you don't really hear much anymore, but it used to be more common, I think, in the pre-conciliar church prior to Vatican II, or at least it seems like it was a term that more people would have been familiar with. And it's just simply this. It's a practice that you can begin using today, and it goes like this. When you're out and about, or you could be in your home, doesn't matter where you are, but typically if you're out and about, start by mastering your will. You know, in other words, you bridle your will to look at things that are entirely harmless. Could be that billboard across the street, or a bus that's coming down the street, or a tree, or what have you. I mean, just practice doing this with things that are entirely benign. It won't cause you any trouble whatsoever. And start intensifying your will to say, I'm not going to look at that. Now, you may feel a little bit silly and say, well, why shouldn't I look at that? There's nothing wrong with that. It's just a tree. True. But the point is, kind of like doing wind sprints if you're practicing for the football team or lifting or all the other things that involve heavy aerobic, cardio, exercising, and things like that. It's not easy. It's not, you know, it's not pleasant. in terms of muscle pain and being out of breath and fatigue and all that. But it's necessary if you're going to win championship football games, obviously. So start practicing that habit of denying yourself looking at something that is entirely benign and it's not going to bother you. If you saw it, if you didn't see it, it doesn't matter. It's inconsequential. Start practicing the habit of custody of the eyes. Here's what will happen. It's kind of like lifting weights or any other form of physical exercise, except in this case, it's not your body that you're exercising, it's so much as your will. What will happen is when things come along or people, those things that you find that trigger you, you will have already developed this stable disposition of being able to say no. Nope, I'm not going to look at that. Nope, I'm not going to glance over there for a minute. And what happens is this will help you both with purity and chastity because you will begin to rule your lower appetites as opposed to your lower appetites ruling you. And it's just a little technique, but it really does work. And the more you practice custody of the eyes, the easier it becomes. That's another thing that you can do. And I suppose I could go into more and more, but I'll just leave those few recommendations. I'm happy to hear that you're moving in the right direction. Oh, and that's one other thing I probably should mention. What you described is common to mankind. I've heard this voice in my head before. Everyone listening has heard this voice in his or her head before, if you're old enough anyway. And that is, oh, well, you did that sin, so you can always go to confession on Saturday. And if you're going to go anyway, you got 4, 5, 6, 7 days that you can lapse into whatever sin you want because you're going to go to confession. So where do you think that voice is coming from? I think that's coming from the evil one, honestly. And my impression is that when you hear that, the first thing you should do is stomp on it, first of all, because it involves, among other things, the sin of presumption, presuming upon God's mercy. Yes, God loves you. Yes, God is merciful. But no, you don't know the future. You don't know if you will suddenly die. We see all kinds of stories for some years now about people who die suddenly, including people who are young and healthy, and they just keel over. So maybe if you want to use them as an instructive object lesson, the point here is that you have no guarantees. You don't know if you're going to make it to Saturday. You might not make it to Saturday. You probably will, but you might not. So what a stupid, terrible gamble for anybody to say, well, I will defer my repentance and I will wallow in whatever sin I'm wallowing in for a while longer yet because I know that I'll go to confession. It's the height of folly. It's stupidity on stilts, if you ask me. But we're all prone to that. So when you hear that little voice, just squash it like a bug. Just stomp on it.
I like this custody of the eyes, Patrick. I've never heard of this before, and I looked it up, and there's a couple of bullet points here that might be helpful for people that
I'd
are
like
struggling
to hear them.
With this.
Yeah.
So first, if you're struggling with the way a woman is dressed, immediately look at her face. I don't care how beautiful a woman is. It is essentially impossible to lust after someone's face. The face is the icon of each person's humanity, and it is far easier to respect a woman's dignity when you're looking at her face and not her body.
What's the source? I'm curious.
This is The Catholic Gentleman.
Okay.
All right. Second, it may just be appropriate to stare at the floor sometimes, especially if there's no other way to avoid temptation. This doesn't have to be the norm, but if the situation warrants it, it is foolish not to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Third, and you mentioned this, avoid places you know are especially problematic for you. For most men, the beach is a problem. And it goes on.
Yeah.
It's like if you're on a
diet. I would concur with
yes,
that.
Yeah. I know. I know what this guy's talking about. I mean, if you're on a diet, don't go in the donut shop.
Yeah. Hey, I'll be in the deli if anyone needs me.
Yeah. Not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
And finally, you mentioned this one too. Fast and pray. This should go without saying. And yet I am always amazed that men think they can control themselves without God's help. It simply isn't possible.
Yes, I'm glad you raised those points, you know, different ways of saying this. It's important for people to know about it. And, like, you know, it's interesting to me. I think that most people have not heard that phrase, custody of the eyes, at least not in this context.
Yeah, it's new to me.
Yeah, but it's so, it really is helpful. And what happens is, of course, the gentleman who wrote me the email, he's talking about a particular sin, but this can be applied to other sins in general. This can be applied to pride, for example. If your predominant fault is pride, well, you can bridle these thoughts of judging others and feeling so superior to other people, things like that. So you could take the same concept or the same tactic and apply it in different ways. But ultimately, what it gets at, as you were sort of emphasizing there, Cyrus, is it gets at you being able to control the appetite as opposed to the appetite controlling you. And that, of course, is where these addictions come in. I'm not so sure if I had to throw a dart. I'm not entirely sure if I agree with that advice about look at a beautiful woman's face. I think that in a case like that, if you're feeling, you know, electrified, the best thing to do is just like look at that tree across the street or look at that cloud
look
up
at
in
your
the
feet.
Sky. Yeah, look down, look somewhere else. But that's just me. You know, we're all different. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? Our sponsor, Creative Planning, has options. More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
I love this song, man. This brings me back. I was listening to this stuff on the radio when it was out. Anyway. Patrick Madrid here with you. I promised you that I would share with you a bunch of emails that have been accumulating, so you might even hear yours this hour. This one comes in from Jenny. She's listening in Washington, D.C. on our 1260 AM station. And she says, Patrick, your explanation to a caller a while back of how complete all of our bodily systems are, except for the reproductive system, of which we have only half, is the most striking way I have heard of making the point that complementarity just doesn't that the word complementarity just doesn't communicate. How I wish you had argued before the Supreme Court, whose reasoning was if two infertile people are allowed to marry, since they can't have children, any two people who can't have children, in other words, two men, should be able to marry. And she signs off as R, A-R-R-R-R-G-H. And I don't think she's trying to be a pirate. I get it. I understand what you're saying, Jenny. So for the benefit of people who heard what you just wrote but are not familiar with it, you can teach kids very easily using this. You know, hey, everybody, how many people here, I've done this in big groups before, how many people here, raise your hand, how many people here have a complete digestive system? All the hands go up because everyone has a complete digestive system. How many here have a complete nervous system? All the hands go up. How many people here have a complete circulatory system? All the hands go up. And you want to do this 3, 4, 5, 6 times with the different systems of the body and then say, and how many people here have a complete reproductive system? And all the arms are going to go up. And then people will say, well, wait a minute. And the arms will go down. And as you heard me say on the show, nobody has a complete reproductive system. You have, I have, everybody, male or female, has half of a reproductive system.
Yes, that's true.
It is true. So what does that mean exactly? Well, and you already know this, Jenny, so I'm just sort of expanding on what you heard me say for the benefit of others, and that is that you can even just see in your body the fact that your body in the reproductive system area is made for something. I mean, your digestive system is made to digest food. Your circulatory system is intended, the goal of the circulatory system is to pump blood through all parts of your body, to oxygenate the blood that needs the oxygen and to circulated around the body so that you can stay alive, because that's what helps the cell stay alive, et cetera, et cetera. Exactly. So you can go down the line and say, well, unto myself, just myself, by myself, without recourse to any other human being, I have the capability of completely fulfilling in my body what these different systems do, circulatory, nervous system, digestive system, etc. But isn't it strange when you think about how you also have a reproductive system that, taken unto yourself without recourse to any other person, can't do anything along the lines of what it's intended to do? You can't procreate by yourself. Nobody can. So you mentioned, Jenny, the word complementarity, and you're right. The word complementarity, it just doesn't have the oomph that this kind of an explanation can have for some people. But it just simply means, for those listening, that our bodies are made to complement one another. And I don't mean, oh, hello, you look so fine today. I'm not talking about that. In order to achieve the end that this system is designed to accomplish, you need another person. This is why men and women get married, for the purpose of procreation. Cyrus, when you were a kid, when I was a kid, there used to be this rhyme. I don't know if they still say it or not. How did it go? You know, Patrick and Nancy sitting in a tree.
K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
So they did say that when
you were a kid. Of course. Yeah, they still do that, I think.
First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes
baby in a baby carriage.
There you go. Yeah. So I didn't know if that was unique to the 1900s. The last century, the last millennium. I'm from the last millennium. So they still say that then.
Yeah, this reminds me. When I was a kid, I heard my mom say the word cool. I'm like, you can't say that. That's my word.
You're not allowed to say that,
You're not allowed
Mom.
To say cool. Yeah.
You're too
old. These things, they last forever. That's not going away.
Patrick and Nancy sitting in a tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G. And all the giggling and all the blushing that went along with that. Yeah, it was just, it was innocent, because even children know. They don't even know what they don't know, which is good. But even they know. They just intuitively recognize the binary, male and female. So I'm not trying to make too much out of the note that you sent in, Jenny. And I realize that you sent it in by way of a compliment, and I thank you for that. So I just want to expound on it, and that is a helpful way for people to, you know, inculcate in others, including themselves, this complementarity between male and female. And any other combination doesn't work. Somebody might say, but Patrick, the Wall Street Journal said that you can now have two, you know, you can conceive a baby with, you know, the DNA from Frankenstein experiments. We're not talking about Frankenstein experiments. You can also destroy a whole city with a nuclear weapon. You can incinerate a million people all at once with a nuclear weapon. And just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. So, yeah, okay, maybe the Frankenstein experiments with DNA, et cetera, who knows where that's going. But it's not going in a good direction, that's for sure. Male and female, he created them, Jesus says. That's, by the way, in Matthew chapter 19. Here we have an email.
Only girls can grow up to be the mummies.
You know, that's a good point.
Only boys can grow up to be the daddies.
Do you realize, Cyrus, how hard he would have been canceled and how fast if he was on TV, Mr. Rogers? If he were on TV now, he wouldn't be on TV now.
We need a Mr. Rogers. I'm glad I had Mr. Rogers, but I wish was an equivalent.
All right. Let me take off my street shoes and put on some tennis shoes. I'm putting on my cardigan sweater. Is that better?
That is better. All right. What do you got to say?
Only girls can be mommies. How did he say it? Let me hear that again. Only girls?
Only girls can grow up to be the mummies.
That's right.
Only boys can grow up to be the daddy.
Sing it, everybody.
How dare he? Get him out of here.
Could you imagine putting those words on a t-shirt and just walking into, like,
did you see
your local college or university? Just walk the campus with that shirt.
Did you see the story? This was just a couple weeks ago. A kid, he's 10 years old. He wore a shirt that said, "There are only two genders," and he ended up getting pulled into the principal's office, and his dad was called in. And fortunately, his dad stuck up for him. And
what do you mean, unfortunately? Fortunately.
Fortunately. Yeah, fortunately, the dad stuck up for him. But the kid he was kicked out. He had to leave the school.
And they say that adults run these schools. Where are these so-called adults? That's just crazy. I didn't hear about that, but I'm not surprised. If you really want to amp it up, so let's say that you wear the shirt that has on, you know, block letters, only girls can become mommies, only boys can become daddies. And then they get mad at you and they threaten you with expulsion. So the next day, don't wear that T-shirt. Wear another T-shirt that says, "I'm praying right now."
Oh,
what are they going to
do? Good luck with that.
Yeah, if you're not allowed to pray, just wear a T-shirt that says, "I'm praying right now." Just imagine the knots that it would tie them in. They would not know how to act. They wouldn't know how to react. Well, they would react in anger and fury. Oh, okay. You ready for the next one?
Let's do it.
I'm just looking at the clock here. I want to make sure we have enough time. So this one, and I don't think I need to keep her anonymous. I'm just scanning once again to make sure. And I don't see a request to anonymize this. Okay, so this is from Valerie. And I won't say where Valerie's listening, just for the sake of her privacy. She says, "Patrick, I have an 18-year-old daughter who states that she is gay. She has a girlfriend. She has had a girlfriend for almost 2 years, whom she has introduced as her friend. I questioned the relationship from the beginning as the other girl looked a bit masculine. My daughter said that it was because she's an athlete. After the truth came out, my daughter pretty much said she doesn't want anything to do with my religion or my God. I am heartbroken. We have a family vacation planned. And my daughter said that if her friend can't go, she's not going to go. She committed to no intimate contact. And she said that they would sleep in separate rooms. My husband and other daughters say, I need to let the girl go or I'll lose my daughter. I feel by allowing her to go, I'm sending the wrong message. I wasn't a good mother when my girls were growing up. She says, I was an alcoholic and I'm trying to make up for lost time now. I've been recovered for 10 years, thanks be to God. And the most profound spiritual experience he allowed me was that recovery. She says, I think teaching them correctly now, especially in our faith, is first and foremost. I don't ever want to offend God again. And I feel that accepting this relationship in any way will do just that. I love my daughter with all my heart, and so I'm terrified that she will live her life thinking that being in a same-sex relationship is okay, especially if I accept it. She says, she said a few kind things about me in the show. I'll just leave that out, and she's looking for advice. So thank you for the kind words, Valerie. Well, your daughter's a young adult. And you mentioned that she is 18 now, and she's probably a little bit older now because you sent me the email some months ago. So my advice would be this. The Lord, number one, he knows that you want to make up for lost time. He loves you. He wants you to be as good of a mom as you could possibly be. And I think that's evidenced by what you're saying here in this email. I can imagine the kind of heartache that this gives you. Because you love your daughter and you want her to be happy. And you realize that even though there may be a sort of kind of fleeting superficial happiness or a fleeting superficial fulfillment, ultimately this is not the true fulfillment and the true happiness and the true friendship and the true love and the true intimacy that all of us are called to with God. This is the kind of thing that will inexorably lead people away. So I understand why you feel the way you do, but my advice, since you asked for it, would be, as St. Ambrose once said to St. Monica, the mother of St. Augustine, who was a wayward young man for years. He was into sex, drugs, and rock and roll of the 4th century variety. And she was frantic like you are. She wanted to get her son sort of back on track. He had not been baptized, by the way. And she wanted to get him back on track. And she kept trying to talk him back into turning toward God, and nothing seemed to work. So St. Ambrose gave her the advice. He says, now it's time for you to speak more to God about Augustine and less to Augustine about God. And she took that advice to heart. And so rather than constantly remonstrating with Augustine, as she had done for many years, she began to just sort of let him do what he was going to do. And she became, as I like to think of it, a battering ram of prayer when it came to this intention for her son. And eventually, this approach worked. And he had a profound conversion. And he came back to his senses, and he turned away from his life of debauchery. And he became one of the greatest saints, one of the greatest theologians the Catholic Church has ever produced. Yes, he was a Catholic bishop, by the way. So don't despair. And maybe it's time now to speak more to God about your daughter than to your daughter about God. Only you can sort of make those precise judgments, but I think that's good advice in any case. You might want to get her a book called The Courage to be Chaste by Father Benedict Groeschel. It's a good book. And it really confronts this issue, you know, whether you are same-sex attracted or opposite-sex attracted. You still have to live within the world in which you can't act on your impulses. You have to rein them in. And how do you do that? Well, chastity, for those of us who are serious about wanting to be in heaven, chastity is a big part of all that. So in this book, Father Benedict Groeschel, he recommends certain techniques that are helpful indeed. So that book, again, is called The Courage to be Chaste. Now, I would also recommend one other resource, and this is free. You can get it on the YouTubes. It's a debate that I did with Father Mike Schmidt. Where did that come from? Cyrus. Don't we have that loaded up, the debate on same-sex marriage that I did with Father Mike Schmidt? Don't we have? Okay. And if it's not there, we can get it up there. But it's a three-hour debate that I did. I should say a mock debate, because I upheld the position.
The authority debate?
No.
No.
It's called the same-sex marriage debate.
I don't see it, so we'll have to get that up there.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you for that. So it was at Franciscan University of Steubenville, I don't know, X number of years ago. And it was a demonstration for the 1,500 people there, the audience, on how you can talk about this issue, about what is marriage? What does marriage mean? What is marriage intended to do? And how is it that some people say that two men should be able to get married or two women? And of course, those are only the entry-level options. Eventually, it will be open to any permutation you can imagine. You know, why does it have to be? Why do you have to marry a human being? Why does it have to be two? Why can't it be three or five, et cetera, et cetera? So in this debate, I undertook to defend and promote a view that I do not hold, and that is to support so-called same-sex marriage. But to fulfill my role in this debate as well as I possibly could and do justice to the topic, I spent months in advance of this debate watching all the pro-gay marriage videos I could find and reading all the arguments. Oh, so you still think that gay marriage is sinful? And you know, I would read the books and watch the videos, and I immersed myself in the ideology that says that you can marry somebody of the same sex. So in the time that I had in the debate, I did my very best to bring forward these arguments and to do an adequate job of presenting them fairly. And I'm happy to say that Father Mike Schmitz did a great job of, in essence, destroying all those arguments with a smile on his face. And so what you'll see here is the debate itself, but also like a follow-up Q&A period where both of us are fielding questions on this topic. Now, the reason I'm going into detail here is because last I looked, it had, I don't know, like 250,000 views, maybe more than that. And it's just really helpful for people, whether they're in favor of same-sex marriage or not. And I have a feeling your daughter would find this very interesting. Father Mike Schmitz is very telegenic. He's very animated. So, I mean, he's easy to listen to and watch on this video. And it's helpful. And so he clarifies things in a way that your daughter, even if she doesn't say, okay, Mom, you're right, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore, at least he will provide her with a framework of ways to think about what she's doing that she probably has never seen before. She's not probably never thought about these things before. Lastly, there is an organization called Courage, and it's a Catholic group, national. In fact, it may be international for all I know, but its intended goal is to help men and women who are dealing with same-sex attraction so that they, like everyone else, can answer the universal call to holiness, so that they can overcome the things that might pull them away and would pull them away from the Lord, so that they can become saints. And this is the same kind of thing that heterosexual people need, but just for different reasons and in different ways. So their website is CourageRC.org, CourageRC.org. You can check in with them. They also have a kind of an ancillary group that's intended for family and people who want to support a son or daughter, brother, sister, who's in this situation, and that's called Encourage, E-N-Courage. And that information is available there as well. So CourageRC.org is the website. A lot of good material there, and it will help. I really do believe it will help. I think I'll leave it at that. We're going to take another break, but we'll be coming back right after this. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Looking for a new job? How about one that offers you opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester, an Illinois life insurance company not available in all states.
Hello. Hello again.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Real life solutions you can believe in. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Right on. I love the cars. Maybe you're in your car right now listening to this program. Thank you for that. Oh, and by the way, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your participation. If you did participate this past week during Pledge Drive, we really appreciate it. And I really mean that, because if it's not for you, we don't stay on the air. So Relevant Radio depends upon you, our listeners. So we're truly, truly listener supported. So I just want to say a word of sincere gratitude to you. If you were able to participate, so many of you did, and we were able to make our goal. So thank you for that. And if you weren't able to participate, sometimes that happens. You might have been traveling or had a sick child or whatever. It just didn't work out for you to participate in the Pledge Drive. We're holding the door open for you for a little while yet. So if you go to relevantradio.com and make your pledge safe and secure there, you can do that right now. And we'll count that toward this past Pledge Drive that we just had. And you can do the same thing on the Relevant Radio app. So either relevantradio.com or the Relevant Radio app. Pledge Drive is over, and this is the time for all of our thank yous. But at the same time, if you still want to participate, you can do it. All right, I'm going to shift gears now. I told you I was going to spend time reading some emails, just because there's so many of them. I mean, one given day a few weeks ago, in the space of, I don't know, just overnight, like well over 100 came in. And I'm not complaining. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining at all. I love reading your emails. I had an email come in this morning from a lady who said, "Can you please tell me how to email Patrick Madrid?" And I responded saying, "You did. This is me. I get your emails. So if you want to send me one, go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on connect and you'll see where you can send me an email. And it comes right to me." So here are a couple kind of going in a different direction. This one is coming in from Thomas. He's listening in California. I don't want to be more specific, only for the sake of the privacy of people. I respect that. So his subject line is the Mormon Church. He says, "Patrick, you recently said that the Mormon Church was not Christian and that Joseph Smith was a false prophet. You said there was information on relevantradio.com to show that. I am torn," he says, "between the Catholic Church and recently the Mormon Church, and I'm looking for some guidance. Can you be more specific as to where I can find that information? I have checked the website. I could not find anything. Thank you." All right. Well, here goes. I'll tell you what I said last time. I always give the same information, and this will not be any more or less clear than last time, but here goes. go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. It's important that you put the slash Patrick on it so that you get to the show page. If you just go to relevantradio.com, you won't find this. So relevantradio.com/Patrick. Once you're there, you'll notice right below the show name where it has three blue boxes. Well, they're more like oblongs. About, links, and contact. Right there, kind of top left, about, links, contact. Click on links. And there, it has a bunch of links, and you'll see one for articles. That's where you want to click. Click that link, Articles by Patrick, and there are roughly 30, 35, 36, something like that. I've lost count. Of the many other articles that I've written over the years, I've written who knows how many, and here are about three dozen that are here for you. They're all free. They're in PDF form, and they're here because they address common questions that often come up on the program. So I can give you an answer on the program and expound for 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes, whatever. But it's helpful, I think, to be able to refer you to this free resource where I can go into much greater detail. And that's what these articles are for. And they're free. All you have to do is go there, and they're yours. You could print them out, save them, text the link to a buddy, whatever. They're there for you. So one more time, go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on links, click on articles, presto. They're right there, okay? Now, the articles that you want that deal with questions pertaining to Mormonism will have the word Mormonism as part of the article link. So there are a couple on the Great Apostasy, which is a Mormon belief that there was a complete collapse of the church, or I should say churches, that Jesus established first in Jerusalem, that we read about in the New Testament, even though he said, I will not leave you orphans, even though he said, I will send the Holy Spirit who will guide you into all truth, even though he said that he will build this church on a rock and the gates of hell will not prevail against it, even though he said, behold, I'm with you always, even until the end of the world, and all the other many promises that the Lord Jesus Christ made about his church, that it would be perpetual, that it would not be overcome, etc. Nonetheless, this is a core teaching of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the Mormon Church, that didn't happen. That when Jesus said these things, it didn't happen. At least it didn't happen the way he said it. And so the belief in the Mormon Church is that there was a total apostasy. Now, this is important that you understand this, because when Joseph Smith, the man who started the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it wasn't known by that title originally. It's the current title that is currently the one preferred. But for those who know the Church is the Mormon Church, he's the one who started the Mormon Church, and the reason that this doctrine is so important is because he did not claim that there was any historical continuity in an unbroken manner between the time of the church that Jesus established in Jerusalem nigh unto 2,000 years ago and the early 19th century when he rose to prominence and claimed to be a prophet, seer, and revelator, and that he was chosen by God to be the one who would restore the gospel that had been lost due to a total apostasy. This is very important because it is a claim that is not based on historical continuity. And you may say, well, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that if you examine the record scripturally, look at what Jesus said, for example, and look at how the church developed, reading the book of Acts, reading the epistles of St. Paul and the other apostolic authors of the New Testament, you see a very different picture. You see that the church, as Jesus promised, would not be overcome, that it would thrive, that it would proliferate, that it would expand into, as Jesus said in Matthew 28, into the whole world. And that's what you see. Now, the Mormon Church's doctrine is that all of that came to a crashing halt at some point early on. And they don't say exactly when, but sometime, let's say within, I think we could safely say within 100 years of the time of the apostles, that all of that came to a crashing halt and that the church that Jesus established in Jerusalem was overcome. It was overcome, they claim, by heresy and Hellenistic philosophy and corruption. And they will point to various passages in the New Testament where it refers to a falling away, it refers to people who apostatize, things of that nature. And that, of course, is all true because there's no guarantee that any individual person won't fall away. And we've seen countless examples over the history of the church where this happens. It's a shame. It's too bad, but it does happen. But that doesn't in any way equate with their claim that the whole church completely imploded. And this is the key, according to Joseph Smith, that the authority that Jesus gave to the church, the keys symbolizing the authority of Jesus that he gave to Peter, for example, that they were withdrawn. And ergo, there was no true church on the face of the earth for the intervening centuries between whenever it was that that allegedly happened. It didn't happen, but in their opinion, it did happen. So from that point forward until the early 19th century, when Joseph Smith is a boy, and he died, 1841, I believe, is when he was murdered. So he had a relatively short lifespan, just a shade over 40 years of age. And so within that short period of time when he established the Mormon Church, his claim was, I'm restoring everything that was lost due to this total apostasy. And all of the plain and precious truths and things that were lost, I am restoring that. So that's where these articles will serve you. Go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, click on links, click on articles, and there are several there that will help you. And by all means, give me a call sometime. We can talk this through. I'll have to save that other email for another time. Until next time, please pray for me. I'll pray for you. God bless you.